Hey everyone, welcome into another episode of a must-win game with Maggie Gray. On today's show, Mike Sando is going to be my guest. He is a writer for The Athletic who covers the NFL, and every year he puts together a must-read article about quarterback tiers. So we're going to talk about Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson. We're going to talk about CJ Stroud. We're going to talk about Caleb Williams versus Drake May and the ceiling for Shedeur Sanders. I was very surprised what Mike told me about all the evaluators and decision makers he talks to and their opinion of Shedeur Sanders. So that's a little bit later on in the pod. But first, I got to start with a little stock up, stock down. And, I got to give my stock down again to the WNBA. And here's why. Over the weekend, there's been a lot of controversy about a hard foul that DeJounay Carrington did while trying to chase down Sophie Cunningham and like execute a chase down block. DeJounay Carrington is known to do chase down blocks. She has been good at them in the past, and this time not so successful. So instead of getting ball, she got Sophie Cunningham's face. And it's a flagrant two. And you can't hit somebody above the shoulders. It's pretty standard and universal that that's going to be a flagrant two. And we can all just sort of move on with our lives. But because it's the WNBA, there's controversy. After the game, DeJounay Carrington put on social media white privilege and then added the Indiana Fever. Now, obviously, Sophie Cunningham has become a bit of a lightning rod herself. She has courted some controversy, simply by speaking out about anything that has to do with trans athletes. You are going to court controversy. You are going to court strong opinions. This is one of those hot button topics in our country, even though statistically there are very, very few trans athletes who are competing. This is just a really tricky topic. So anytime you're going to weigh in on it, you are going to get support, but also you're going to get blowback. Sophie Cunningham has also, participated as a ring girl in a UFC fight, said really nice things about Dana White, and obviously, he has a very dicey past when it comes to women, not just how he's treated female reporters, but there is a video of him in Mexico and he's physically assaulting his wife. So it was a little strange that maybe she would be so effusive in her praise of Dana White. And this is what I'm thinking about when it comes down to the WNBA. Two things. Number one, is all publicity good publicity? And this is something that we've asked many times with the WNBA because, sure, having a hard foul against Sophie Cunningham and then tweeting or putting on social media white privilege after, you know what that's going to do. It's going to get the Fox News cycle going. It's going to get people up in arms, and it's going to get DeJounay's defenders now kind of coming to her to agree with her or what have you. So is this the kind of publicity that's actually helping the WNBA? Obviously, the viewership is up. We understand that the valuations are up of the franchises. But is being in the Fox News cycle or the cable news cycle, we call it that, is that actually translating into more viewers? Ben Affleck once said something interesting, the actor, about dating Jennifer Lopez and how they were this tabloid, like it was a tabloid craze. And he said he would be on all these covers of magazines, but nobody was coming to see his movies. So ultimately, what was he doing? He was selling magazines for other people. He was just becoming a topic to kind of get like washed through the news cycle for someone else's benefit. So then I started to think, okay, not only A, is all publicity good publicity, but two, who really is benefiting from this controversy outside of the cable news people and media, I guess? The two people who are benefiting from this are Sophie Cunningham and DeJounay Carrington. They're the two that get the publicity from this. The WNBA, it's negative, but for the two of them, they kind of get to be the center of attention here. And I have a feeling this would be positive for their bottom line. I don't think anyone else in the WNBA benefits from this. And so it got me thinking, like, are these women actually caring about being in business together. And I think that's the one thing that's getting lost here, because the players have to get a lot smarter about how they're going to use controversy. And so far, to me, this does not feel like it's really working to be fanning the flames on either side when it comes to a topic that is so serious, important, everything as race relations in this country. To me, I don't see how that pushes the league ahead. You know, if I were the women of the WNBA, I want to rethink my whole marketing here, right? I want to rethink how I'm packaging these rivalries, because rivalries are good. I don't want to get those away from sports. I love them, and they ultimately grow the sport. But there's no like twinkle in the eye here. It can't. The topic is way too serious. I'm not saying it has to everything be WWE and everything has to be kayfabe, but can it be something that's just a little bit more rooted in the sport as opposed to rooted in everything outside of the sport? Like, to me, this is the WNBA players who are only looking to grow their own brand and not thinking about the sport as a whole, not thinking about, hey, I'm actually in business with Dejanay Carrington if I'm Sophie Cunningham, and vice versa. And we're all in business with Caitlin Clark. And I think once they start seeing each other more as like business partners, maybe you can start getting something a little bit more positive, because not every social issue has to be a WNBA issue. And again, I would just go back to the first question, which is all publicity good publicity? Are you actually getting more viewers? Sure, more people are talking about it, but are you actually getting more viewers? Are you getting fans in the seats? Are you getting dollars spent on your sport by these controversies, these types of controversies? Again, you get headlines. Does that translate into season ticket holders? Does this translate into ad sales? So for me, if I were the WNBA Players Association, I think we've all kind of stopped expecting the commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, to handle these situations in a way that's meaningful at all. Somebody needs to explain to these women, you are all business partners. So let's start reframing how we think about these rivalries. Like, maybe it just has to come down to the dollars and cents, because this is not a charity league, okay? It's so far past that. This is teams with valuations of billions of dollars. Like, it's got to get more calculated. It's got to get more like a business and not like a bunch of, you know, individuals who are out for themselves in this case. So to me, that would be my one stock down here on the WNBA and just their latest controversy. Okay, I'm also going to go stock down here to the Buffalo Bills haters. May sound a bit like a homer. Most of you know that I grew up as a diehard Buffalo Bills fan, and I still wear it very much on my sleeve. But I just want to share something that I'm noticing here. I'm noticing a lot of Bills frustration. And believe me, I mean, you want to talk about being, you know, knocking your head against the wall with this football team, I'm here for it. And misery loves company, so let's go. But I've noticed that there's this kind of like negativity that's now being tinged with Buffalo in how people are talking about the team and talking about Josh Allen. And what I think has happened is the Bills were the upstarts. The Bills were kind of the darlings, underdogs. You know, the history is so brutal with the four Super Bowls and never being able to win. They kind of became, I would say, like a lovable loser, or, you know, people love the passion of the fan base and jumping through tables and the chicken wings, the beer and all that stuff. So people kind of love to jump on the Bills bandwagon, and Josh Allen is so electric and exciting to watch that it made it easy. Like, there are, even in the Jim Kelly era, you didn't see little kids in New York City and California and Texas. Like, they weren't wearing Jim Kelly jerseys. You know, Josh Allen is a star among stars in the NFL. And the fact of the matter is, he is not one. And at times in some of the playoff games that he's been involved in, he has come up short. And I feel like there's this sort of turning on Josh Allen. Like, he got too much credit for a guy who's never won. Like, to be called the greatest quarterback while Mahomes is still in his prime and Mahomes is winning and Allen's never able to win, that people now see him as like this negative thing, like as a tease. And I think so many people out there have probably picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl, or at one point even kind of wanted to see maybe the fan base actually like get to see a winner in like the way that a lot of people jumped on the Cubs bandwagon. And maybe people thought it was cool when Cleveland finally won an NBA title, or, you know, some of these hard luck franchises who finally win and sort of everyone feels good about. So they haven't been able to do that. So it's almost like now there's sort of this turning on Buffalo because they've never won in the Josh Allen era, that somehow they're just overhyped and they're not, you know, and now it's about picking Josh Allen apart. And this happens with a lot of superstars. It definitely does. I feel like Peyton Manning went through a little of this before he won his first Super Bowl. But it's almost like the Bills now have become like a villain, but they haven't won anything. Like, usually you have to win to become the villain. Like, you have to win too much and then people kind of get sick of you. And this is a little bit different. It's almost like people are getting sick of the Bills because they haven't won and because it's been this tease and because they get so close and then they fall short. And I think there actually was a little of this with the Bills in the 90s. There was like a Bills fatigue, but they were at least going to the Super Bowl. Josh Allen has not even been to the Super Bowl yet. So I've just noticed a lot of negativity. There's been a lot of negativity online about the new stadium, some of the sight lines, obviously the gray uniforms people really hated. I don't know why everyone got so passionate about how these uniforms were so bad, but it's almost like any chance to really dunk on Buffalo now, it seems like the greater kind of NFL fans at large kind of want to take this opportunity. Like, Josh Allen has worn out his welcome with you guys. You know, like, you loved him, you believed, but he still hasn't done it. And now we're like, you know, getting into him being in his 30s. And you've just seen this movie so many times and he hasn't been able to deliver for a variety of reasons, whether he's been an issue in playoff games, whether the defense has been an issue, whether the injuries have been an issue, they've gotten out coached in the past. Every different way you can lose, the Bills have lost. But I wasn't expecting to see the type of negativity. I think there is a resentment by some football fans who don't believe now that he should get the kind of accolades he does because he hasn't won. So this is just a little something I've noticed. I don't know if it would change if the Bills actually were in the Super Bowl. Would people get behind Josh Allen? I'm not sure. But I noticed now there's like, he was the darling of the NFL, and I don't think he has that anymore. People are upset because he hasn't won. And now kind of turning on him and Buffalo. Okay, without further ado, let's get to Mike Sando. He is an NFL writer for The Athletic. He's a Hall of Fame voter. He is so deeply entrenched in the league. And he does this column every year that I absolutely love, where he puts all the quarterbacks in tiers. It's so fantastic. It causes lots of controversy, but the fun kind. And Mike is here to talk about Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson, the perception of both of those quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, for sure. We start the conversation there. And also the younger guys, Drake May versus Caleb Williams. Who's got the higher ceiling? What's Shador going to become in the NFL, if anything? CJ Stroud, Jalen Hurts. We cover a lot of ground in this interview. And there's even an appearance by Mike's dog. His name is Joel. So I don't know if it's Billy Joel, but he's cute. You'll see him if you're watching this on YouTube or on social media. So here's Mike Sando. First and foremost, you got to start at the top to me, and that's with Patrick Mahomes. Mike, I don't think there's a bigger story in the NFL this season. If he's healthy, to me, this could be Chiefs Dynasty 2.0. How much of a concern was there from the people you talked to about Mahomes getting this going again after the knee injury.
Well, no one's really worried about Mahomes. Like, physically, everyone thinks this guy's amazing. He'll come back from the injury. I do think longer term, they've asked him to run too much, or he's had to, because their weaponry has fallen off around him. So I think that's a longer term concern. No one thinks he's slipped physically to this point. Obviously, he needs to rehab. People are more interested in, like, what's the offense going to look like? They spent money on the running back from Seattle, Kenneth Walker III. Everyone knows Andy Reid kind of, like, probably wants to pass all the time and be in the shotgun and that sort of a thing. So it's a little bit more, I think, going to be a referendum on the coaches this year, Andy Reid in particular, how he runs that offense with Mahomes in this situation, coming off of the injury and probably at a point in his career where they could modernize their offense again. I really think they could. Most teams are now a little bit more under center again, you know, try to get the run game threat. You have to have a run game threat now, or it's too hard on the quarterback. Mahomes is good enough to get around it. They were ranked decently on offense last year, even when he was, you know, it wasn't as spectacular as it's been, but they were still a top 10 offense when he played. But to really reach those elite heights again, I think he needs a little more help more than Mahomes needs to do more.
Yeah, it's a great point. To me, the Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson conversation is always going to be endlessly fascinating. You know, yeah. Josh Allen is in tier one. And he obviously deserves to be in tier one. Lamar Jackson goes down to tier two this year. Mm-hmm. Why the split there?
I think that, you know, Lamar Jackson was a difficult one for people to evaluate early in his career, because the top tier is defined as this: carries his team every week. That's Lamar. Expertly handles the peer pass situations, meaning when the defense and the offense know we have to pass, that's when it gets real. And Lamar wasn't always as good at that. He sort of needed the run threat, the defense early in his career. So he didn't get his due, I don't think, early because of that component. Then he does become an excellent passer. He goes rockets up to tier one. But it's like, why would he fall out after kind of an off year when, let's just say, Mahomes doesn't fall or some of these other guys? And specifically with Josh Allen, I think part of it is this. If you look at those guys in tier one, and including Josh Allen, Josh Allen has not gotten to the Super Bowl, but he's had great playoff stats. I mean, his playoff performance is night and day different statistically than Lamar. And those top four guys, even Burrow, who hasn't been there lately, I think that's another interesting discussion with his durability, has been to a Super Bowl. And so I think when you haven't been, if you look at the top of tier two, talented guys in Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert, but haven't had the ultimate team success that some of those guys at the top maybe haven't played as well in the playoffs, I think that makes them a little more volatile. And so maybe Lamar Jackson, what he needs is to just break through and get to a Super Bowl, easier said than done, or play better in the playoffs, which he started to do, but it's no comparison to Josh Allen's playoff performances. When you just put them side by side, the numbers, it's not even close.
Yeah, the numbers for Josh Allen are very good in the playoffs, but there are the moments with Josh Allen in the playoffs, you know, where they'll be in Kansas City, they need a touchdown, he can't get past the 50-yard line, or, you know, fumbling in Denver, or, you know, I'm just curious, like, none of the moments for Josh Allen seem to really count against him, even though he's had the ball in his hands a few times with the game on the line in the playoffs and has not been able to deliver.
I think some of it helps is that for him is like 13 seconds is clearly the coach. You know, I mean, that's a coaching component of it too. I think that they've had, you know, a good defense and a good run game in Buffalo, but at different times. And if you look at, you know, Baltimore's, other than the 1 year in 2024, they were not good on defense. And Lamar showed himself to be tier one to me all the way, because he was able to win without good defense. Very hard to do. I mean, with terrible defense, almost nobody wins. And Lamar showed he could do that. So I got no problem putting Lamar in tier one. 22 of the 50 voters put him in tier one, but 28 of them didn't. And that's where we're at, top of tier two. I think it makes it a, you know, something to talk about and try. I almost each year I can anticipate what the things people want to talk about. And that's just going to be one. I think Lamar is so fascinating because I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame. Kind of do. I mean, I just think he's such a superstar. And I think some of those traits and things that without the playoff success, I think he may still, I think he was just so electric that I think it's actually going to work in his favor for his legacy.
Yeah, I can't imagine another two-time quarterback MVP not being in the Hall of Fame. The one-time MVPs, okay, sometimes they don't make it in. But a two-time guy, I feel like that would be impossible, even though he's basically lived in tier two, according to, you know, the majority of the decision makers and people you've talked to.
Yeah. And I think I always say this in the voting, like, you know, the votes say as sometimes as much about the voters as it does the players. And I can see it in the splits of the voting, like the coaches will often see things a little differently than the front office people. Like this year, the coaches are much higher on Aaron Rodgers than the personnel people, you know? And so you can, there's different reasons why, like the things for Aaron Rodgers can do at the line of scrimmage, or, you know, he's in charge of the whole thing. He's almost running the operation, you know? And so the coaches like that, but the front office people are like, what's he going to say on McAfee and what's my owner going to think? You know, there's some of those types of things that, or he can't move anymore. You know, we got to have a different guy. I'm nervous if this is our quarterback at this age, you know? So you can see some of those splits. And, you know, with Lamar Jackson, I think that he's had to overcome the idea that for a lot of his career, when he really had to pass it all the time without the running threat, it wasn't as good. And it has been as good, I think, lately. I think it was in 24, but not last year.
Why do you think Joe Burrow's health has not counted against him in these quarterback tiers?
I think it really helped him, even though they didn't go to the playoffs in 2024 when he played the whole season and they were scoring 30 points a game and just couldn't quite win, even though he was playing great. Did he miss five games last year? Something like that. So, but I also believe with Joe Burrow, he's what people want because he's such a great passer. And passing is the thing that doesn't dry up if you're great at it. The pure passers are, I think, valued in this poll. Dak Prescott moved up five spots this year. And I'm like, did he do something different? But I think in this era, when the position has gotten so much younger and there's so many guys who almost have to have a paint by numbers offense who can't, you know, they need to be told, look here, 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 but don't worry what the defense is doing. Guys like Dak or guys like Burrow who decipher it all and make the pinpoint passing, that is still the standard in the NFL, even as there's more quarterbacks who can beat you with their legs.
Does that explain why Jalen Hurts is so far down this list? Considering, you know, we talk about playoff performances. I mean, Jalen Hurts has been to two Super Bowls. He performed excellent in both of them. I mean, I know he had a pick six in the first one and they lost to the Chiefs, but he was amazing for the rest of that game. And obviously he was the MVP of the Super Bowl they won.
Super Bowl they won, he's 17 of 22, throws them to a big lead early. They take their foot off the gas a little bit and coast to a big win. Nobody feels like they would, everyone on defense would love to have Jalen Hurts having to throw the ball all game. That's what it comes down to, you know? And so, yes, he's going to add value on the sneaks and he's been, you know, he's made some big plays in big moments. But like right now, if the Eagles signed him to a top three contract, locking them in for the next 5 years, I think the rest of the division would probably be like, yeah, that's fine. Bring him on. We don't think he's going to differentiate. There's certain routes and things he can do, the deep ball, the slants, but he's not the operator like a Dak Prescott even is. People would way rather have Dak Prescott.
You know, now I was not going to ask this question, but I'm going to ask it now. Like, if you ask all the decision makers that you spoke to rank the quarterbacks of the NFC East.
Well, let's see, Dak will be number one right now because Jaden Daniels fell a little bit with his injury year. You know, I think Jaden Daniels would have been number one coming off of his rookie year because he was so impressive, not just as a runner, but as a passer. And then the team success going to the championship game when you're Washington, they haven't won anything. I think he was on his way to tier one, still could get there. But the injuries last year, they were 2-5 when he started. I think people sort of tapped the brakes, you know. So you go Dak on his body of work, you know, then you probably go you go Jaden Daniels because hey, the guy's been mostly great when he's played. Then you go Jalen Hurts. And remember, Jaden's gonna benefit too from the fact that we don't have 5 years of actually knowing what he is. We can kind of envision some things, right? Like, oh my gosh, this is the guy, this is a stock you'd want to buy too, right? You'd buy that stock before you'd buy Hurts stock right now, even if Hurts has a little bit of a, you know, obviously a better body of work. So Hurts is going to be third, perceived as declining, but still in tier two. And we'll see this year, you know, he's had a lot of things against him too, with the coordinator changes, and Philly's a tough market. I think he's probably a little underappreciated in that regard. And then Jackson Dart, I think, is a clear fourth, where he's just got to prove that he knows how to play the position, because he's almost like a brawler out there. Like, everyone loves in boxing, everyone loves a brawler, but you can't catch punches when you're a quarterback. You know, you can't catch too many of them. And he does. He is throwing caution to the wind out there and almost taunting guys. That never works. You never see somebody hold up doing that. And so he has to be a little bit more refined and pick his spots better. And we'll see if it happens this year.
I want to ask you about some of the young guys. When you're talking to these decision makers, do you get a sense, who do they think has the higher ceiling, Caleb Williams or Drake May?
Probably Caleb Williams on the pure talent. I don't know that that makes him a safer bet to rise. I think when you are that magical as a runner, you do invite inconsistency into your game, because you're going to have some downs too. And so his highs are going to be, I think his highlight tape already is probably one of the best in the league. I mean, some of the plays he made in the playoffs last year, nobody makes that those plays. I mean, nobody. Like the falling all the way back and throwing it over the top, I mean, that was miraculous. But is he going to be as consistent down to down? So it's probably Caleb Williams. I think they will say that. And Drake May takes a lot of sacks, by the way, too. So some of that's on the quarterback. I think it's probably, you know, people would see Drake May as maybe a little bit of a steadier, but where's the ceiling for sure? Whereas Caleb Williams, we know that the talent's there. I mean, this guy can be unbelievable.
I mean, I guess I still kind of think of him as a young guy, but CJ Stroud, I mean, it seems like he took a tumble. I mean, talk about after his first season, it was like Jaden Daniels. We thought he was going to be the next thing. And now after our bad playoffs, it's almost like, you can't find the CJ Stroud supporters. How dire is this for Stroud?
Yeah. So CJ Stroud had that great year, rookie year. And so he debuted in quarterback tiers at like eighth overall, fell off a little bit the next year, and he still was ninth. So I think people really liked what they saw overall. He dropped down to like 20th this year. And I think there's concerns about how he handles pressure, and then their ability to protect him, because the offensive line has really been a problem there for them and him. And is he getting to a point where he's almost, I don't want to say seeing ghosts, you know, in the famous New York Jets way, but you do start to feel pressure when it's not there, when you've been hit a lot. And so there's some concerns with him that that could be him, and that he maybe needs it better around him than we thought. And so if you go back to his rookie year, that offense was a little bit of a simpler offense for quarterbacks. It's a good offense for quarterbacks with the play action. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, we've seen guys in that system outperform their talent level. The system he's in now puts a little bit more on the quarterback. And so I think we're finding out, can CJ Stroud handle that? Well, not when the blocking's not good. And maybe a lot of guys couldn't. So do they fix that this year? And if so, he better take a big jump, or he may be kind of a high tier three guy.
Man, talk about seeing ghosts though. Man, does Sam Darnold get the last laugh on that one? As he's a Super Bowl champion, and Geno Smith, the starter now for the Jets, is like, was he 30? I think he's this pretty far down.
Yeah, Geno, I wonder if he fell too far. You know, he's at the top of tier four. I just feel like that. I get it, because he's older and he does risk the football. I mean, he can throw the ball well, but he takes chances. And I think, though, the Raider situation was as bad as you can get for having a, I think Pete Carroll is a good head coach, but when they came in there, it was like, what's going on? He had to inherit the defensive coordinator, who Patrick Graham's very good, but he doesn't do what Pete wants to do. So you're not on the same page there. Pete's trying to influence a veteran coordinator, and then they hire Chip Kelly and pay him $6 million. That he doesn't do what Pete wants to do. So they felt like a team in conflict without the requisite talent. And Geno, to me, was caught in that. He was stuck in that. So I get it. I wouldn't boost him way up there and think he's going to be great, but I think he's a veteran quarterback who you can win with if it's decent around him. And my dog is going to join the chat.
Oh, there we go.
Joel, dogs you are always so welcome. Needy. Girl, you're so needy. Do you
what's
really
the dog's
climb
name?
Up? Hey, that's him right there.
What's his name?
His name is Joel. He flunked out of service dog training because he's a little friendly and plays a lot.
Can we see his face a little bit? Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, hey, I'm not a fool. Joel, the internet loves dogs.
Let's say hello.
Hey, Joel.
You are a big guy.
Last one on the young guys. Did you get a sense of what people think the ceiling could be for Shador Sanders?
Yes, and not very high. And so of the 50 voters, I believe a dozen of them put him in tier 5 already. That never happens for young players. Because tier 4 is sort of like, hey, not enough info, he's young. Tier 5 is like, I don't think he can do it. And so J.J. McCarthy got 10 of those votes, which is very unusual too for a young player. And people just don't feel like Shador can do it. So I don't know if that's fair, like, after such a limited run in a bad situation where none of the quarterbacks have played good since probably Jacoby Brissett probably overperformed there and Baker Mayfield had some good times. So I think you got to reset the decks with him. You know, the new coach is probably good. One of the people in the column drew a little bit of a comparison to Chicago, because not that Shador has Caleb Williams' talent, but you have a coach coming in Todd Monk and like Ben Johnson, who's kind of no nonsense and is going to just not sugarcoat anything, is going to provide probably some accountable coaching. And that can go one of two ways. The player may not like it and not do well with that, or it could be helpful. And I think for someone like Shador Sanders, there's very few people like that with his pedigree. You come up, you're Deion Sanders' kid, and you're kind of a star beyond even what your talent is. And so you probably have a lot of people that are maybe afraid to coach you hard. Now, his dad might coach him hard. I don't know about that. But it's different now. It's not your dad coaching you. And so how will he do? I'm actually kind of interested in seeing it. Like, Todd Monken is going to be direct with him. Does he respond well and maybe show some people wrong? Or is he just deficient enough in the talent to make it not really matter in terms of being a starter?
And then I just have two quick ones more. Yeah. The other was about Dak Prescott. You kind of mentioned it before, but something has happened with Dak where there's like an optimism around Prescott, where he used to be this sort of polarizing kind of quarterback beyond just like being the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. And now it feels like everyone would die to have Dak Prescott as their QB. What changed?
Well, yes, I agree with you. A few people that were ahead of him probably slipped back. You know, that would be Jaden Daniels. That's part of it. But he got more tier one votes this year, or about as many as he'd gotten in his whole career. So there's something going on. Clearly the weaponry is great. Does that put him in a better light? But aren't we supposed to kind of cut through that and say what the quarterback is independent of what's around him? I think a couple things could be going on. It's now been about 3 decades since the Cowboys were really pushing deep in the playoffs with some good quarterback play, Romo too. Do people kind of appreciate that it's difficult there now, even though they have decent talent? Like, when the owner is effectively undermining the coach because everyone knows he's the one in charge making the decisions, does that now sort of divorce Dak from a little bit of the playoff talk and that type of a thing? Another thing to consider is the league has gotten as young as it's been in the last few years at quarterback, going back decades, because all these older guys like Matt Ryan's and Philip Rivers, a ton of them retired, even Alex Smith's and guys like that. So there are a bunch of young quarterbacks that are learning it and aren't in command. And I think when you see Dak Prescott, he kind of looks like the classic quarterback more in terms of running the show, and you can hand him the 2-minute drill. You can kind of give him the keys to things, and he's not going to be tier one, you know, but he's going to run the offense in a real professional manner. Is that now getting him some love that he wouldn't have stood out as much when there were 7 more guys who could do that? You know, it's interesting to me.
That is an interesting point. You know, like, his skills are now being more appreciated because there's so many other wild card kind of quarterbacks that we're not sure exactly what their ceiling is going to be. What was the most surprising thing that you found? Because you've been doing this now, and like I said, it's so illuminating. What did you find was the most interesting takeaway from this year's list?
Well, I'll give you a kind of a subtle one. Always tier one is interesting, you know, and Dak moving up. We've talked about that, but I thought there was a lot of optimism around the Saints quarterback, Tyler Shuck, from the people who played against him. So he got a lot of tier fours because a lot of people just didn't see him. You're not really watching the Saints. And so they're like, whatever. But the people who played him were like, okay, like I think four people put him in tier two already. He's played half a season. You know, there was a bunch of people that put him into tier three. So I think he's someone to watch in a quarterback friendly environment, that indoor stadium. They used a top 10 pick on a receiver. They got the good running back in free agency from Jacksonville. You know, they re-signed Chris Olave. It's like, to me, that, and I think Kellen Moore's probably a good quarterback coach, good play caller. We don't know head coach what he is, but like, that's a young player who could be in tier two next year and people would be like, what?
I appreciate this so much. I kept you a little long. Thank you so much. We got an appearance from Joel. I mean, Joel, your dog, yes. It doesn't get much better.
I really need to have some more treats down here so I can bribe him to kind of, you know, hang out down there. But this probably made the show better.
100%. Everything is better with dogs. So yeah. I'm a dog person. It's totally great. And thank you again for doing this and for doing all this work for our benefit and entertainment, because I know it's a labor. Maybe a labor of love.
It is the labor of love. I really enjoy it. So thanks for having me on, and hopefully we can do it again.
Okay, that's going to do it for another episode of A Must-Win Game. Thank you again to Mike Sando. Thank you all for continuing to hit subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. Gosh, I would be so grateful if you could just hit that subscribe button. It's something really small, but it certainly does help me out quite a bit. We are going to be back again on Wednesday with a brand new episode of A Must-Win Game. We will see you then.